The alien hum of cicadas filled the air. There's never silence. Well, alpines are also called mignonette, and they grow wild in France on the hillsides, and they're as big as your thumbnail. They have amazing flavor intensity for their size. Tell me another. I open my eyes to slits. Strawberries are not a joke. I've gotten shit from almost everyone I've ever met about it. It's such a cute thing about you. The word cute lights up like neon in my dim bedroom, and I'm so rattled, I begin babbling. Fine. Okay. Early glows. They grow so quickly. One day you're walking along at sunset next to nothing but green. The next morning, they're all there. Little red buds getting brighter. By dinner time, they're done. Like red Christmas lights. When Josh sighs, his eyes close for a second. He's exhausted. Which are your favorites? Red gauntlets. They were in the rows closest to the kitchen, and I was too lazy to go much farther. I had a big pink smoothie every morning. He sits in silence, and his eyes are definitely not the man I know. They're wistful, lonely, and so beautiful I have to close mine. I swear I can still feel the seeds between my teeth. Chandler's are my dad's favorite. He says he paid for my college tuition with them. What's your dad like? He's Nigel, right? You and that blog. He worked so hard to send me to school. I can't begin to tell you. He cried on the back porch the day I left for college. He said, I trail off. The squeeze in my throat makes it impossible to go on. What did he say? I sidestep. I haven't thought about this for so long. I haven't been home in 18 months now. I missed Christmas because Elaine went back to France to see her family and I wanted to cover for her. I didn't go home either. Oh yeah. My parents mailed me a big care package and I ate shortbread and opened presents on the floor of my living room watching infomercials. What did you do? Pretty much the same. What did he say to you then? Your dad on the back porch? He's a dog with a bone. I can't relay that entire conversation. I'll start crying. I might never stop. My dad, his elbows on knees, the tears making clean lines down his tanned, dusty face. I abbreviate the conversation into a sanitized nutshell. That his loss was the world's gain. And my mom, she couldn't stop bragging, telling everyone about her daughter going off to college. She's making a new variety of strawberry, and they are all called Lucy's. According to the blog, Lucy 12 was quite good. Tell me more. I don't understand your fascination with that blog. Mom was a newspaper writer, but she had to give it all up. For what? For my dad. She was doing a piece on the effects of some heavy rain on agriculture, so she went out to a local orchard. She found my dad in a tree. His dream was to own a strawberry farm, and he couldn't do it alone. Do you think she made the wrong decision? Dad always says, she picked me. Like an apple right out of the tree. I love them, but I think it's a sad story sometimes. You could ask her sometime. She probably doesn't regret a thing. They're still together, and it means you're here. Dad calls you other names starting with J, but never your real name. What? He looks alarmed. You've told your dad about me? He's mad at you for being so mean. Julian and Jasper and John. One time, he called you Jebediah and I nearly peed myself. You'd have to grovel to my dad, that's for sure. Josh looks so disturbed, I decide to cut him a break and change the subject. When I'm homesick, I can smell warm strawberries, which is pretty much all the time. I watch him scrambling to try to unscramble these nonsensical statements. Did you play out there in the fields when you were a kid? You've seen the block picture. It's pretty clear I did. I turn my face away. Me, knees stained pink from berry juice, tangled mane of hair, eyes bluer than the sky. Wild little farm girl. Don't be embarrassed. He gently puts his fingertips on my jaw and turns me back. You in your little overall shorts. You look like you've been outside for days, all dirty and wild. Your smile hasn't changed. You never see my smile. I bet you had a treehouse. I did, actually. I practically lived up there. His eyes are bright with an expression I've never seen. I close my eyes for a second to rest them. He checks my temperature, and when his hand lifts away from my forehead, I complain. He touches my hand. I've never thought where you come from is inferior. Oh, sure. Ha ha. Strawberry shortcake? I think where you came from, Sky Diamond Strawberries, is the best place I can imagine. I've always wanted to go there. I've Google Map directions. I've even looked up the flight and hire car. Do you like strawberries? I don't know what else to say. I love strawberries. So much you have no idea. He sounds so kind that I feel a wave of emotion. I can't open my eyes. He'll see I have tears in them. Well, it's out there waiting for you. Pay the lady under the umbrella and take a bucket. Mention me for a discount, but you'll get an interrogation on how I'm doing. How I'm really doing. If I'm lonely, if I'm eating properly, why I won't take the time to come home. I think of the job applications, side by side in a beige folder. A wave of exhaustion and dizziness hits me. I want to be asleep, that lovely dark place where these anxieties and sadness can't follow me. I start to feel like I'm slowly spinning. What should I tell her? I'm so scared. It's all going to end soon, one way or another. I'm hanging on by my fingernails. I have no idea if their investment in me will ever pay off. And I'm so lonely sometimes I could cry. I lost my best friend. I spend all my time with a huge frightening man who wants to kill me, and he's probably my only friend now, even though he doesn't want to be. And it breaks my heart. His mouth presses on my cheek. A kiss. A miracle. Josh's warm breath fanning my cheek. His fingertips slide into my palms, and my fingers curl into his. Shortcake. No. I'm twirling through endless loops, and I tighten my grip on his hands. I'm so dizzy. I am, but I also need this conversation to end. I need to ask you something. Sometime later, his voice cuts through the hazy darkness. It's not fair to ask now, but I will. If I could think of a way to get us out of this mess, would you want me to do it? I'm still holding on to him like he's the only thing stopping me from falling off the planet. Like how? However I could. Would you want me to? If he would be my friend for the days left, it would be enough. It would be wonderful enough to burn away the negativity. That smile would be enough. This is the part of the dream where you smile, Josh. He sighs, frustrated. He holds me still, and as I orbit away into sleep, I whisper it through the fog of sleep. Of course I would. Chapter 11. I sit up cautiously in a bedroom lit bright by sun. Artifacts of illness are strewn everywhere. Towels, washcloths, my Tupperware container washed clean, glasses and medication, and a thermometer. My sleepy-saurus pajama top is hanging from the hamper. So is the red tank. My paintball clothes lie in a puddle and need to be burned. I suck the thermometer to confirm what I already know. The fever has broken. I'm wearing a blue tank top now. I clutch the mattress as vulnerability makes a long overdue appearance. I feel my shoulder and realize I'm still wearing my bra. I thank all available gods. But still, Joshua Templeman has seen all the rest of my torso skin. I peer out into the living room. He's still here, sprawled out on the couch, one big socked foot dangling off the end of the couch. I grab fresh clothes and stumble into the bathroom. Good gracious! My mascara didn't wash off properly in my shower and instead melted down my face into an Alice Cooper Halloween mask. I also have Alice Cooper hair, which I contain in a bun. I change, wash my face as fast as I can, and gargle mouthwash. At any moment, I expect a knock on the door. This feeling is worse than a hangover. It's worse than waking up after a nude karaoke performance at the office Christmas party. I said too much last night. I told him about my childhood. He knows how lonely I am. He's seen everything I own. He's got so much knowledge, the power will fog out of him in toxic clouds. I have to get him out of my apartment. I approach the couch. It's a 3-seat sofa, but he can't remotely fit on it. He jolts before I can get a glimpse of him sleeping. I think I'm going to be okay. My magazines are stacked. There are no high heels under the coffee table. Joshua has tidied my apartment. He's lying a few feet from my huge wall cabinet filled with Smurfs, stacked 4 and 5 deep. He turned the lights on, and it's illuminated proof that I'm mental. He stands up, and the room gets a lot smaller. Thank you for sacrificing your Friday night. I don't mind if you want to leave. Are you sure? He is fussily pressing the backs of his fingers on my forehead, cheek, throat. I am definitely feeling better, because when he touches my throat, my nipples pinch in response. I cross my arms over my chest. Yes, I'll be okay now. Go home, please. He looks down at me with those dark blue eyes, and the memory of his smile is overlaid across his solemn face. He looks at me like I'm his patient. I'm no longer elevator kiss worthy. Nothing like a little vomit to destroy chemistry. I can stay, if you can manage to stop freaking out. There's a kind of pity on his face, and I know why. It's not all one-sided. I've seen a hidden part of him, too, during this endless night we've survived. There's patience and kindness beneath his asshole facade. Human decency. Humor. That smile. His eyes have flecks of light in their depths, and his eyelashes look as if they'd curl against the pad of my little finger. His cheekbones would fit in the curve of my palm. His mouth, well, it'd fit me just about everywhere. "Your horny eyes are back," he tells me, and I feel my cheeks heat. "You must be feeling better if you can look at me like that." "I'm sick," I say it primly, and I hear his husky laugh as I turn away. He goes into my bedroom, and I take several gulps of air. "You're a little sicko, all right." When he reappears, he's holding his jacket, and I realize he spent the entire night dressed in his paintball clothes. And he doesn't even stink. How is it fair? I'm getting frantic. I grab at his elbow when he toes on his shoes by the door. Yeah, I'm leaving. You don't need to pick me up and throw me out. See you at work, Lucinda. He rattles a bottle of pills at me. Go back to bed. 2 more next time you wake up. He hesitates again, reluctance written all over his face. Are you sure you'll be okay? He touches my forehead again, rechecking my temperature, though surely it couldn't have changed in 30 seconds. Don't you dare tease me about this on Monday. The word Monday rattles between us, and he takes his hand away. I think that's our new safe word. I'll pretend it never happened, if that's what you want, he tells me stiffly, and I feel a sinking in my gut. The last time I asked that of him, it was about the kiss. He kept that promise pretty well. Don't try to use anything against me. The job interviews, I mean. The look on his face probably melts the paint off the wall behind me. Knowing the consistency of your vomit will give me the edge. For fuck's sake, Lucinda. When the door bangs behind him and silence expands to fill my apartment, I wish I had the courage to call him back. To say thank you, and to apologize for the fact that, yes, he's right, as always. I am completely freaking out. To avoid thinking about it, I sleep. When I open my eyes again, I have a new perspective. It's Saturday evening, and the sunset is making the wall at the foot of my bed a glorious honey peach candle glow. The color of his skin. My bedroom blazes with the force of my epiphany. I stare at the ceiling and admit the astonishing truth to myself. I don't hate Joshua Templeman. It's White Shirt Monday, 6:30 a.m. I'm so washed out, I should call in sick. And Elaine isn't in anyway, but I need to see Joshua. Rest assured, I have micro-analyzed every moment he was in my apartment, and I know I need to apologize for throwing him out like that. He was nothing but decent and kind to me. We were teetering on the edge of friendship, and I ruined everything with my sharp mouth. When I recall eavesdropping on Josh's conversation with Patrick, I feel sick with guilt. I wasn't meant to hear any of that. How do I properly thank a colleague for helping me vomit? My grandma's vintage etiquette handbooks won't help me with this. A thank you note or a pound cake won't quite cut it in this instance. I stare at myself in the bathroom mirror. The weekend's sick fest has bleached me of color. My eyes are puffy and bloodshot. My lips are pale and flaky. I look like I've been trapped down a mine shaft. My kitchen is now as neat as a pin. He has sorted my mail into a tidy pile on the counter. I claw open the top envelope with one hand, while I dunk an herbal tea bag with the other. It's a friendly little note to advise me that my rent is going up. I squint at the new monthly figure, and my inhalation probably rattles the Smurfs on their shelves. My rash announcement to quit B&G now feels infinitely more terrifying. How can I even attempt to face an interview panel at a different company and try to articulate what makes me so good at my job? I try to think of all the things I do well, but all I can think of is pranking Joshua. I'm childish and so unprofessional. I sit down heavily and try to eat a mouthful of dry cereal from the box. Then I wallow in low spirits and self-doubt a little more. I open an internet browser and begin clicking my way through a depressingly barren recruitment website. I'm relieved to be interrupted by my phone buzzing with Danny's caller ID. Weird. Maybe he has a flat tire? Hello? Hi. How are you feeling? His tone is warm. I'm alive. Barely. I tried to call you a few times on Friday night, but I kept getting Josh. Man, he's such an asshole. He helped me out. I hear how stiff my voice is and realize I'm beginning to prickle in defensiveness. What the hell is happening? He held me while I threw up and called his brother in the middle of the night. He washed my dishes, and I'm pretty sure he watched me sleep. Oh, sorry, I thought we hated him. Are you going to work today? Yeah, I'll go. I'm downstairs in the lobby if you, want me to drive you. Really? Isn't today your first day of freedom? Well, yeah, but Mitchell's written me a letter of recommendation and I need to pick it up. It's no trouble to give you a ride. I'll be down in 5. I check to make sure my gray wool dress is zipped up. Putting lipstick on my haggard face would look ridiculous. Hi, Danny calls when I step out of the elevator. He's holding a bunch of white daisies. My emotions balance on a tightrope between delighted and embarrassed. It seems he's on the tightrope right next to me. I'd have to be blind to not see the split-second pop of crestfallen surprise in his eyes. As sweaty and gross as I was on Friday, I still looked better than this. He blinks away his reaction and offers me the flowers. Are you sure you shouldn't stay home? I look worse than I feel. Should I... I gesture at the elevator. I take another look at him. He's wearing a Matchbox 20 concert t-shirt, and the sunglasses on the top of his head have ugly white frames. We stand awkwardly and stare at each other. You could always put them on your desk at work. Okay, I will. It seems like a bad idea, but I'm all flustered. If I take the flowers upstairs, I'll have to invite him up. We walk out to the pavement, and I breathe my first fresh air in days. I need to snap out of it. Danny has been nothing but thoughtful this morning. I shade my eyes from the sun. Maybe I can try being thoughtful, too. Maybe the convenience store sells olive branches. I need to grab something. I'll be right back. As I pay for Joshua's thank you gift, plus an overpriced red adhesive bow, I can see Danny leaning patiently against his car. I stuff the present into my bag and scurry back across the street. He opens the door to his red SUV and helps me in. I watch him round the hood. In casual clothes, he looks younger, slimmer, paler. As he straps himself in and starts the car, I realize I haven't properly thanked him for the red roses. I am a girl with no manners whatsoever. I love the roses. I look at the little bouquet on my lap. The daisies? He pulls into traffic. Yes, these are daisies. A good choice for someone recovering from an epic vomit weekend. I wish I hadn't said something so gross, but he laughs. So, Josh Templeman, what's his deal? The devil sent his only son to Earth? Weirdly, I feel guilty. He's got a big brother protective vibe going on. Danny's fishing, and I know it. I am noncommittal. He does? Oh, yeah. But don't worry. I'll tell him my intentions are honorable. He throws me a sideways grin, but a sense of deep disappointment is starting to echo through me. The sparky little flirtatious feeling in my chest has died. Am I like a little sister to Joshua? It's not the first time a guy said that to me. Ancient embarrassments echo through me. He'd kissed me in the elevator. That goes against this theory. But he'd never tried again, so maybe it's true. I remember telling him how hot the elevator kiss was, and wince. He didn't tell me you tried to call. Thanks for checking on me. I didn't think he'd pass on my messages, but it doesn't matter. I'd like to take you out again. Dinner this time? You look like you need a good meal. I have to appreciate his perseverance in the face of my weirdness and present appearance. Just because I have developed a fascination with Joshua doesn't mean I should say no. I look at Danny. If I'd thrown a torn-up wish list into a fireplace, he's the guy Mary Poppins would have delivered. Dinner sometime would be nice. He parks in a 20-minute zone, and I sign him in as a visitor. As the elevator doors open, I realize too late he has delivered me all the way to the 10th floor. Thanks. He steps out with me and tugs me to a halt. Take it easy today. He straightens the collar of my coat, his knuckles brushing my throat. I resist the urge to look to my left. Either Joshua is at his desk, witnessing this tableau, or he's not in yet. The tension of not knowing is excruciating. Dinner? What about a little dinner tonight? Couldn't hurt. Sure. I agree just to get him to leave. He gives me the daisies with a little flourish, and I manage a smile. I slowly pivot. Once upon a time, this moment would have been a triumph. I've had daydreams like this. But when I see Joshua sitting at his desk, sharply tapping paperwork into straight stacks, I wish I could rewind time. We're playing a new game. While I don't know the rules, I do know I've made a major misstep. I lay the daisies on the end of my desk and shrug out of my coat. Hi, buddy, Danny says to Josh, who slouches down into his chair. It's a boss-type power pose he has perfected. You don't work here anymore. Josh isn't one for pleasantries. I gave Lucy a ride in and thought I'd come by and make sure I'm not treading on your toes. What do you mean? Josh's eyes grow knife-sharp. Well, I know you're pretty protective of Lucy, but I've been treating you right, haven't I? I'm floundering under their collective gaze. Sure, of course. For a guy facing off against someone Joshua's size, Danny certainly does have a remarkable amount of courage. He tries again. I mean, you've clearly got some kind of problem. You were a real asshole on the phone on Friday. She'd got vomit on her tank top. I had enough to deal with without being her secretary. Your protective big brother thing is something we need to talk about. Voice is down, I hiss. Mr. Bexley's door is open. Well, No one is good enough for my kid's sister. Joshua's voice is heavy with sarcasm, but I still deflate. This morning is the absolute worst. And you're right. I don't work here anymore, so I'm free to date Lucy if I want. Danny looks past me at my desk and raises his eyebrows. Well, well. What do you know? Romance isn't dead. Joshua scowls darkly and picks at his thumbnail. Get out before I throw you out. Danny kisses my cheek, and I am almost certain he did it because of our audience. It was a petty move on his part. I'll call you later today about dinner, Luce. And we'll probably need to talk more, Josh. Bye, man, Joshua says in a fake voice. We both watch Danny get in the elevator. Mr. Bexley makes a bull-calf bellow from his office, and I finally notice the red rose on my keyboard. Oh, I'm a complete and utter moron. It was there when I got in. I've more than 1,000 hours in the same room as Joshua, and the lie in his voice is crystal clear. This rose is velvet red perfection. In comparison, the daisies look like a tangle of weeds growing in a sewer. They were from you. Why didn't you say so? Mr. Bexley bellows again, more annoyed. Josh continues to ignore him and impales me with his glare. You should have had Danny stay with you, not me. I don't know. He's nice. Olympic level floundering. Yeah, yeah, nice. The ultimate quality in a man. It's right up there. You were nice to me on the weekend. You were nice to send me roses, but you're back to being a total fuckwit. I am hissing like a goose by this point.
Dr. Josh? Mr. Bexley interrupts from his doorway. My office, if you can possibly spare me a moment. And mind your language, Miss Hutton.
He huffs off.
Sorry, boss, I'll be right there.
Joshua says through gritted teeth. We're both blazingly frustrated and mere seconds away from mutually strangling each other. He sweeps past my desk and whips away the rose. What is wrong with you? I make a grab for it, and a thorn drags across my palm. I only sent you those fucking roses because you looked so cut up after our fight. This is why I don't do nice things for people.
Ow!
I look at my palm. A stinging red line is forming. I'm holding drops of blood. You scratched me. I catch him by the cuff and squeeze his wrist in a death grip. Thank you, Nurse Joshua. You were wonderfully kind. And thank your gorgeous doctor brother. He remembers something. I have you to blame for the fact I now have to go to this wedding. I'd nearly gotten out of it.
That's your fault.
My fault? If you hadn't been sick, I would never have seen Patrick. That makes no sense. I never asked you to call him. He examines the line of blood I've left on his cuff with a look of complete and utter revulsion. He stuffs a tissue into my palm. Just wonderful, he tells me, tossing the ruined rose in the trash.
Disinfect that.
He disappears into Mr. Bexley's office. I open my inbox and see our interviews have been scheduled for next Thursday. My stomach makes a little heave. I think of my rent. I look at the empty desk opposite me. I then lift up my mouse pad where I have hidden the little florist's card from the bunch of roses. I'd peeked at it last week whenever Joshua wasn't looking. I stare at the card and wonder how I could have ever thought it was from Danny. It's Josh's handwriting, but I didn't notice the way the letters slashed and swooped. You're always beautiful. There's one red petal on my desk, and I press it onto the pad of my thumb and breathe it in deep while the daisies blur at the corner of my eye. My palm stings and itches. Josh is absolutely right. I've somehow injured myself due to my own carelessness. I sit and breathe in the scent of roses and strawberries until I can trust myself not to cry. Chapter 12. I feel childish as I look at his rolled-up white cuffs, one of which now contains my DNA.
He's glowering at his computer screen and has not spoken a word to me in hours. I've royally fucked up. I'll dry clean your shirt, I offer, but he doesn't acknowledge me. I'll buy you a new one. I'm so sorry, Josh. He cuts me off. Did you think it'd all be different today? I feel a lump begin to squeeze in my throat. I'd hoped so. Don't be mad. I'm not mad. His neck is red against his white collar. I'm trying to tell you I'm sorry, and I wanted to say thank you for everything you did for me. And are those pretty daisies for me, then? I remember. This might fix everything. Wait. I did get you a present. I pull the little plastic cube topped with the red bow from my purse. I present it to him like a boxed Rolex. His eyes spark with an unidentified emotion before he reassumes his frown. Strawberries. You said how much you love them. The word love has probably never been said in this office, and it gives my voice a weird little tremor. He looks at me sharply. I'm surprised you remember anything at all. He puts the strawberries into his out tray and logs back onto his computer. After several more minutes of silence, I try again. How can I pay you back for everything? The balance has shifted dramatically between us. I'm in his debt now. I owe him. Tell me what I can do. I will do anything. What I want to say is, speak to me. Engage with me. I can't fix anything if you ignore me. I watch him continue to type, his face expressionless as a crash test dummy. Stacks of sales figures are to his right, and he slashes a green highlighter across them. Meanwhile, I am at complete loose ends with no Elaine. I'll clean your apartment for you. I'll be your slave for a day. I'll bake you a cake. It's like a soundproof pane has dropped in between us. Or maybe I've been erased. I should let him do his work in silence, but I can't stop talking. He can't hear me anyway, so it won't matter if I say this next thing out loud. I'll go with you to the wedding. Be quiet, Lucinda. So he can hear me. I'll be your designated driver. You can get drunk. You can get so drunk, and you'll have the best time. I'll be your chauffeur. He picks up his calculator and begins to tap. I persevere. I'll drive you home and put you to bed like you did for me. You can vomit into Tupperware and I'll rinse it. Then we'll be even. He rests his fingertips on his keyboard and closes his eyes. He seems to be reciting a string of obscenities in his mind. You don't even know where the wedding is. Unless it's in North Korea, I'll go. When is it?
This Saturday.
I'm free. It's settled. Give me your address and I'll pick you up and everything. Name the time.
Pretty presumptuous of you to assume I won't have a date.
I nearly open my mouth to retort that I know for a fact I'm his plus one. Just in time, my cell phone rings. Danny. I swivel my chair a full 180 degrees. Hasn't he ever heard of texting? Hi, Lucy. Feeling any better? Are we still on for dinner? I drop my voice to a whisper. I'm not sure. I have to go pick up my car, and I've been feeling pretty shitty.
I've heard so much about this car of yours. I think it's silver. That's as much as I can remember of it. I've booked a table for 7 tonight. Benito Brothers. You said you like it?
There's not much choice left then. It's hard to get a reservation there. I try not to sigh. Benito Brothers is good. Thanks. I won't have a huge appetite, but I'll do my best. I'll meet you there.
See you tonight.
I hang up and sit facing the wall for a bit.
Danny Fletcher has a cliched evening in store for you. Italian restaurant, checkered tablecloth, probably a candle. He'll push the last meatball to you with his nose. Second date, right?
Let's change the subject. I pretend to start typing. My screen fills with error messages.
Most guys would try for a kiss on the second date. That stops me in my tracks. And the look in my eye is probably crazy. The idea of Joshua making an effort on a second date is inconceivable. Joshua on a date, period. I imagine Josh, seated across from a beautiful woman, laughing and smiling. The same smile he once gave me. His eyes lit up, anticipating a goodnight kiss. I've got a dark ball of pressure burning in my chest. I try to clear my throat, but it doesn't work. I'm not the only one looking a little crazy. Just say it. You look like you're about to explode. Do yourself a favor and stay home tonight. You look terrible. Thank you, Dr. Josh. Why does fat little dick call you that anyway? Because my parents and brother are doctors. It's his way of reminding me I've failed to reach my potential. His tone indicates I am the town simpleton, and he gets to his feet. I trail after him down the hall toward the copy room. He doesn't slow, so I grab him by the arm. Wait a minute. I'm trying to fix this. You're right, you know. I did come in here today hoping these last days together might be different. He opens his mouth, but I steamroll ahead. He's letting me hold him against the wall, but we both know he could pick me up like a chess piece if he wanted to. Some heeled shoes are clopping toward us, as sedately as a Clydesdale, and my frustration mounts. I need to clear this up, now, or I'm going to have an aneurysm. The cleaner's closet will have to do. It's thankfully unlocked, and I walk in and stand among the chemicals and vacuum cleaners. Get in here. He obeys, reluctantly, and I pull the door shut and lean on it. We remain silent as the heels round the corner and continue past. This is cozy. Josh kicks his toe against a bulk quantity of toilet paper. Well, what? I've screwed up. I know I have. There's nothing to screw up. You've pissed me off. The status quo is maintained. He leans an elbow on a shelf to drag his hand tiredly through his hair, and his shirt slides up an inch or so out of his trouser waistband. We're so close I can hear the fabric stretch and slide over his skin. I thought maybe the war might be over. I thought we might be friends. His eyes flash with disgust, so I might as well put it all out there. Josh, I want to be friends with you. Or something. I have no idea why, because you're awful. He holds up a finger. There's an interesting couple of words in among what you just said. I say a lot of interesting words, and you never hear any of them. I ball my hands until the knuckles crack, and the realization hits me across the head. The reason for my rising distress is this. I will never see his hidden softness again. I think of his hands braced on either side of my pillow, talking me through the fever. His hands passing easily over my skin. Right now, he looks like he'd burn me at the stake. He was my friend once, for one delirious night, and it's all I'll ever get. Or something. He uses his fingers to add quotations. You said you wanted to be friends or something. What exactly does or something entail? I want to know my options. It probably entails not completely hating each other. I don't know. I try to sit on a stack of boxes and they crush underneath me, so I stand back up. So, what is he? Your boyfriend? He has hands on hips and the small room shrinks to microscopic. He's close to me now. Whatever divine soap Josh uses, I need some. I'll keep a bar of it in my top drawer to scent my lingerie. I feel my cheeks beginning to heat. You couldn't care less if I date Danny. You can't believe any guy would want to be with me. Instead of replying, he holds out his hand, palm up. His shirt sleeves are still rolled, and I look at the strong tendons and cords in his wrists. I notice, for the first time, he has those muscly guy raised veins in his inner arms. Touching at work is against HR policy. My throat is bone dry. Not touching me should be illegal. He stares expectantly at me until I slide my hand into his. It's hard to resist someone holding out his hand this way, and it's completely impossible if it's Joshua. I register the heat and size of his fingers before he turns over my hand to inspect the scratch on my palm, handling my hand like an injured dove.
Seriously, though, did you clean this? Rose thorns can have fungus on them. The scratch can get infected.
He presses around the wound, fussing and frowning. How can he be these two different men?
A second realization hits me. Perhaps I am a determining factor. The concept is scary. The only way I can get him to drop his guard is to drop mine. Maybe I can change everything.
Josh? When he hears me shorten his name, he folds up my fingers and gives me my hand back.
It's time to try this. I pray I'm not wrong.
I wanted you there on Friday night. You and only you. And if you don't want to be friends with me, I'll try to play the or something game with you.
There's a long pause and he doesn't react. If I've misjudged this, I will never live it down. My heart is pulsing uncomfortably fast.
Really? He is skeptical.
I push him against the door and feel a thrill when I hear the thud of his weight against it.
Kiss me.
I whisper it, and the air gets warmer.
So the or something game involves kissing. How interesting, Lucinda.
He passes his fingers through my hair, raking it gently away from my face.
I don't know the rules yet. It's a pretty new game.
Are you sure about that?
He looks down to watch my hand spread out over his stomach. I push at the hard flesh. It doesn't remotely give.
Are you wearing a bulletproof vest?
I've got to in this office.
I really am sorry for hurting your feelings and for throwing you out of my apartment.
Josh.
When I use his shortened name, it's a little peace offering.
It's an apology.
Frankly, it's a pleasure. It lets me imagine he's my friend. My friend, who lets me run my palms up his torso in a cleaner's closet. I wish he'd run his hands up mine.
Apology accepted. But you can't expect me to be a nice guy when another man walks you into the office and kisses you and gives you flowers. It's not the way this game works between you and me.
I have never had the faintest clue on how it works.
I swallow heavily.
He touches his fingers underneath my chin, raising my face to his.
I thought you were so clever, Lucinda. I must be wrong.
I rise on tiptoes, and when my hands slide onto his shoulders and grip. When I press my fingernails into him, his throat constricts in a swallow, and I manage to land one glancing, open-mouthed kiss across it. I can feel the effect it has. His hands flex, his hips tilt toward me. Something heavy presses into my stomach.
This is the best game I've ever played in my entire life.
His hand settles on my lower back, and I arch against him and manage to get one hand on the nape of his neck.
Is there any reason we're not kissing yet?
The height difference, mainly. He's trying to conceal the fact he's got an erection hard enough to dent a tin can. It's an impossible task. I smile and try to tug him down to my mouth.
Well, don't make me climb up there.
His mouth belongs on mine, but he doesn't move down farther. His face tightens with indecision and restrained lust. I imagine he's mulling over the work implications.
We're barely working together for another 2 weeks, so what does it matter?
I congratulate myself on my casual tone.
What a romantic proposition.
His tongue emerges and licks the corner of his mouth.
He wants to.
It's obvious he does. But yet he still resists.
Put your hands on me.
Instead of grabbing me, he puts out his hands, offering them to me like I just did to him. Then he just stands there. His chest rises and falls.
Put them on yourself.
Nothing ever goes the way I expect it will. I take one of his hands and lay it on my side. The other I decide to slide around to my butt. Both squeeze me, but they don't move. Basically, I'm feeling myself up, hardly aided by him at all.
Is this to get around the HR rules? No more HR threats. It's a complete waste of breath at this point. Saying it is a waste of my breath. I need all the oxygen I can get. The heat of his hands on me burns through my clothes. I push his hand down to where my butt meets thigh. He has to bend down a lot, and it gets his mouth much closer. Now I pull his other hand up from my ribs to the side of my breast. He looks like he's about to pass out. My ego is nearly too big to fit in this room. So, this is what sex with you would be like. I can't resist teasing him. I was hoping you'd participate a little more. He finally says something. I'd participate. So well you wouldn't walk straight the next day. More footsteps pass. I'm in a room smaller than a jail cell, and Josh has his hands on me. Too bold for my own good, I lift his hand and press his fingertips into my cleavage just to see what happens. That's okay. Walking is overrated. Whatever control he has on himself slips significantly, and his hand regains its autonomy. He puts a hand under my knee to lift my leg. His fingertips stroke up under the hem of my dress, making a smooth line up my outer thigh to the side of my underwear. His fingertip touches the elastic and I shiver. Between my breasts, his fingertips dip and stroke. Then he puts my foot back on the ground and both his hands in his pockets. I want you to do something for me. I want you to have your cute little date with Danny, and I want you to kiss him. Even as he says it, his mouth twists in distaste. I drop back down to my regular height. We've said some fucking unbelievable things to each other recently, but that was completely out of left field. What? Why? I drop my hands from his shoulders. The sinking feeling has started. He's been messing with me all along. He sees the alarm in my eyes and halts my retreat with a hand on my elbow. If it's better than our elevator kiss, case closed. Date him. Plan a spring wedding in a gazebo at Sky Diamond Strawberries. I begin to protest, but he cuts me off. If it isn't as good, you have to admit it to me. To my face. Verbally. Honestly. With no sarcasm. Every loophole is neatly closed. It's weird you want me to. I take a step back and knock over a broom. The or something game doesn't resume until you tell me that no one kisses you like I do. Can I just tell you now? I tiptoe up again, but he won't have a bar of it. No way am I going to be your little experiment before you choose Mr. Nice Guy. So yes, I want you to kiss Danny Fletcher tonight and report back on the result. If it goes great, then good luck to you. You certainly are biased against nice guys. He adds one more caveat. One last thing. If kissing him isn't as good as kissing me, you can't kiss him again. He opens the door and pushes me out. Mr. Bexley is clomping along sullenly, so I pull the door shut quickly behind me. He does a double take when he sees me come out of the janitor's closet. I was looking for some glass cleaner. There are fingerprints all over the office. Have you seen Josh? He's not anywhere. Everything's falling apart and he's gone. He's gone to get you coffee and donuts. You've been so busy. Promise you'll act surprised. Mr. Bexley perks up, puffs, and grumbles all in one guttural sound. Then he looks at my dress and its contents with such a leisurely perusal, I put my hands on my hips in annoyance. He doesn't notice. You're looking a little flustered, Miss Hutton. I don't mind a young lady looking a bit pink in the cheeks. You should smile more, though. Oops, my phone is ringing, I say, even though it isn't. Remember, act surprised when Josh gets back. I can be surprised, he tells me, and heads to the men's bathrooms. He's got a newspaper in one hand. Josh can take a leisurely meander downstairs now. I keep my composure until I get back to my desk, but then I let myself do what I've desperately needed to. I pant for air. I huff like I've run a half marathon. Sweat is beading on the back of my neck and my face is dewy.
My fingers are burning hot from touching the cotton covering his skin. I fog up half the shiny surfaces of the 10th floor before I am composed enough to even sit. I'm so turned on, I wish I could knock myself unconscious until it passes. Joshua returns 20 minutes later, bearing donuts and coffee. He still beats Mr. Bexley back from the bathroom. Nice save, Joshua tells me, putting a hot chocolate and a strawberry donut beside my mouse pad. Impressive thinking on your feet. I stare at the gorgeous pink donut like we've fallen through a wormhole while he disappears into his boss's office. In the space of 20 minutes, self-doubt has begun to erode my confidence that I can handle the or something game. He's too big, too clever, and my body likes him way too much. I'm desperate to try to lay some kind of ground rules. When he sits at his desk and sips his coffee, it all comes out in a vulgar blurt. If the or something game involves sex, it'll be a one-time deal. Once. One meaningless time only. I clap my hand over my mouth. He narrows an eye cynically and begins eating the strawberries I gave him. It's mesmerizing. I never see him eat anything. One. I hold up one finger. Just once? You're sure? Would you at least buy me dinner first? He leans back in his chair, enjoying this exchange. He bites, chews, swallows, and I have to look away because, frankly, it's sexy as hell. Sure, we can hit the drive-thru for a happy meal. Gee, thanks. A burger meal and toy before we went and did it. Once. He sips at his coffee and looks at the ceiling. Couldn't you at least spring for a fancy Italian restaurant? Or do you want me feeling cheap? Once. I put several knuckles into my mouth and bite them until it hurts. Shut your mouth, Lucy. Can you define what one time would involve? He rests his chin on his palm and closes his eyes, yawning. You'd think we were talking about a work presentation, not a naked, dirty game in my bed. Did your parents never give you the birds and bees talk? I sip my hot chocolate. I'm trying to understand the rules up front. You make up an awful lot as you go along. Could you email them to me? Mr. Bexley walks between us, breaking the moment, and makes an unconvincing sound of surprise when he sees his coffee and donuts on his desk. I'll be in 1 minute, Joshua calls to him. To me, he says, once, huh? You'd restrain yourself? I see the edge of his mouth lift in a little smile, and he begins to click on his computer screen. Don't look so self-satisfied, I hiss as quietly as I can. It's not a guarantee it'll ever happen. Don't act like it's only me who wants this. This isn't some favor you'd be doing me. It's the pretty big favor you'd be doing yourself. He doesn't seem to be making a sleazy reference to what lies beneath his zipper, but I look there anyway. I can't seem to stop talking. To kill off this weird sexual tension between us, then yes, it would be only once. Like I said, what does it matter? He blinks hard, opens his mouth to speak, then seems to reconsider. For a guy who's just been told by a woman she's considering having sex with him, he looks a little disappointed. Then I guess I'd better make it count, Shortcake. A promise and a warning. I bite my donut nearly in half so I don't have to reply. I got the upper hand, defining the terms a little. He stands and picks up his coffee. It's a signal of retreat. But then he slams the tennis ball back into my court, forcing the decision back onto me so squarely, I have to admit, I'm impressed. He writes something on a blue post-it note. His spiky black letters swoop and slash, ink spreading a little into the veins of paper. He writes down something I never dreamed I'd ever know. I have no idea if it's for the purpose of picking him up before the wedding or something. I can't ask because my mouth is so full. He sticks it onto my computer screen. His home address. Chapter 13. I keep half expecting your big brother to storm in here any moment and haul you off. You're out on a school night now, Danny says as I slush my spoon half-heartedly in lemon gelato. I'm sure he's idling his car out front, ready to run you over. It only comes out half like a joke. The waitress comes to check on us. Again, we reassure her of how delicious everything is. Everything's flippin' perfect. Check tablecloth and candles. Romantic music and me cleaned up nicely in a red dress and lipstick. The only thing keeping me from dozing off is the little sharp, nervous feeling in my stomach when I think of the near inevitable kiss tonight. I need to ask, are you single, available? I'm getting a vibe. You and he aren't. Yes, no, no, no vibe. Absolutely no vibe. I'm single. Then I repeat it a couple more times. Danny's expression is doubtful. The lady doth protest way, way too much. A slice of panic opens in my gut. If anyone suspected me and Josh of being involved in any way, there'd be repercussions. Reputation-wise. HR-wise. Dignity-wise. I remember the amused looks and nudges at the post-paintball meeting and cringe to think the horse may have bolted. There's been heaps of office hookups. Samantha and Glenn. Phew, that was a disaster. Danny grins. He's a gossip, I can tell. He raises his eyebrows, hoping I'll have my own juicy scandal to share, but I shake my head. No one talks to me at work. They think I'll snitch. Is it true Josh completed first-year medical school? I don't know. His parents and brother are doctors, though. We always lived in hope he'd quit Bexley Books and go be a proctologist or whatever. I have to laugh. So, did you have a bad breakup in the past or something? Danny looks genuinely curious. I guess I'm trying to work out why you're single. I haven't had any time to date, and I haven't put in enough effort to make new friends after losing touch with people from Gammon after the merger. My job has taken over my life. Working for a CEO isn't your typical 9-to-5. So, what was that rose on your desk? He raises his eyebrows expectantly. It was a joke. He waits for me to elaborate, but when I don't, he gives up and changes the subject. Did you get your application in for the new exec position? It's in. Interviews are next week. Is there a big field? The shortlist for interviews is just me, a couple of externals, and my good buddy, Joshua Templeman. 4 applicants in total. You've been waiting a long time for this, Danny surmises. Maybe I've got my crazy intense eyes on again. Elaine has been big on developing me. When we were Gammon Publishing, I was earmarked to transfer into the editorial team after a year of working for her. I hear how bitter my voice is. Danny considers, it's not uncommon to get into publishing any way you can, even if it means taking an admin role. Half the people here didn't start out in their dream job. It was smart to jump on any opening you could. No, that's not my issue. I really am glad I've moved into a business role. But then the merger happened. Yes. So many people lost jobs, I was lucky to keep mine. Even if it's meant staying in the same role. I lost my best friend. I make it sound like she's dead now. Chief of Operations will look pretty impressive on your CV, especially at your age. Yes. I breathe, imagining it in Arial font. Then I imagine it on Joshua's CV, and the delicious daydream turns sour. I'm preparing a presentation for the interview. It's something I've been thinking about for a long time. I haven't been in the position to be as influential as I'd like. The timing's always been off. I want to set up a formal project to get the backlist into ebook format. Repackaging the whole book, covers, the works. I think getting this new role will give me the leverage I've been lacking. Sounds like you'll be needing lots of support in terms of cover design. Keep me in mind, Danny says. He rummages in his pocket and gives me his new business card. A lady at the next table looks at him sideways like, what a douche. He signals for the check and hands over his credit card.
Oh, thank you, I squeak awkwardly, and he smiles. We walk to my car. Sorry I talk so much about work.
It's no problem. I used to work there, remember?
So...